The content of this program is intended for people who are blind, have low vision, or print disabilities. Hello, I'm Doris Hyde for the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next half hour, I will be presenting the latest vision news. Today's vision news is underwritten by the Apex Lions Club, serving the community since 1937 by providing services and financial support for people who are blind, have low vision, or print disabilities. To learn more about the services provided by the Apex Lions Club, go to apexlions.org. First up, from the North Carolina Health News.org. The Americans with Disabilities Act is 35. NC has made strides, but has more to go. Amid the celebration of the landmark legislation, public health officials looked backward and forward. Article by Anne Blythe, B-L-Y-T-H-E, Dateline August 5th. Sometimes when mapping out things to do that could make the future better for the community, it can be helpful to pause and reflect on the path to today. That was what happened for North Carolina public health officials and people living with disabilities. Took time to celebrate the 35th anniversary of the landmark Americans with Disabilities Act, or ADA, at the end of July. The legislation signed into law on the White House lawn by George H.W. Bush in the blazing summer sun on July 26, 1990, bans discrimination against tens of millions of people living with a disability in the U.S. by guaranteeing them reasonable accommodation in employment, education, transportation, and other community settings. Bush described the act as the world's first comprehensive declaration of equality for people with disabilities. The 1999 U.S. Supreme Court Olmstead ruling further reaffirmed the right of people with disabilities, especially those with developmental disabilities and mental illness, to live in the community instead of being unjustly segregated in institutions. Chris Egan, Assistant Secretary for Employment and Community Access Transportation at the State Department of Health and Human Services, told NC Health News, "The law was a driver of a paradigm shift over the past 3.5 decades. Disability is natural. It's not a character flaw. It isn't someone's fault," Egan said. The ADA really, for the first time globally, focused on the possibility of the American dream, meaning each unique individual's opportunities and gifts and talents could be put that way. It's about respect and really thinking about this as not how we define someone. A disability is a part of your life, but it isn't how you're defined. Personal impact. Governor Josh Stein marked the historic day with a proclamation, saying the ADA has expanded opportunities for Americans with disabilities by reducing barriers, changing perceptions, and increasing opportunities for full participation and inclusion in community life. Egan helped lead a discussion about the ADA at a conference room in the Hilton Raleigh North Hills last week. The legislation occurred, he told the audience and panel members who spoke at the event, through the tireless grassroots efforts of people with disabilities advocating for themselves, as well as their families, friends, and allies looking to build a more inclusive and equitable society. Kenneth Kelty, K-E-L-T-Y, a motivational speaker at the Carolina Institute for Developmental Disabilities, a host of the Waiting Room podcast, a platform for telling the stories of people who live with disabilities and their caretakers, was among the speakers that day who shared their personal stories. So was Lydia Williams, a hairstylist, singer, songwriter, and musician who said she struggled with a learning disability and ADHD. Eventually, she learned about the state's DHHS's Employment and Independence for People with Disabilities program and received training that helped her lean more toward her creative side and find meaningful work through that avenue. The singer-songwriter told the audience about how she gained confidence through that training, which has helped her in the workforce. That nurturing also gave her the courage to sing and play guitar at the anniversary celebration, as she shared an original song she called Abilities. "I am not what they planned," she sang, "for I'd fallen short of the world's views of who I really am. I didn't plan the tragedies that led to my incapacity, but I know God still has great plans for me." Deb Goda, G-O-D-A, who directs the state's Olmstead Health Equity Portfolio, found that moment to be one of the more moving at the celebration. "To just hear, 'I was told I was slow and just couldn't keep up,' And now she's a hairstylist and a singer-songwriter, has done graphic design, and is so much more than anyone ever told her that she could be, Goda said. If there's any takeaway, we need to stop assuming we know how much somebody can achieve and stop telling them how they will never get somewhere and just give them as much encouragement as we would want and see how far we go. And have high expectations, Egan added. If we have high expectations, people will achieve. Dev Sangvai, S-A-N-G-V-A-I, DHHS secretary since the start of the year, said of the anniversary, people with disabilities bring so much value and talent to our communities. The ADA's commitment to creating opportunity and increasing access remains critical to our goal of improving the well-being of all North Carolinians. While there is much to celebrate, there have been many bumps in the road, and there are still obstacles ahead. Disability Rights of North Carolina took DHHS to court in 2017 in a lawsuit more widely known as the Samantha R. case. It was named for Samantha Roney, R-H-O-N-E-Y, whose family contended she was not getting the kinds of community services required under the Olmstead Plan. The Supreme Court's Olmstead decision found that uncalled for segregation of people with disabilities without opportunities for work or play in their communities was unlawful discrimination. Since then, the state has developed some long-term plans to ensure that doesn't happen. Disability Rights of North Carolina settled the Samantha R. case in 2024 after nearly a decade of legal wrangling. As part of that settlement agreement, clear goals were established to move people out of institutional settings and into communities where they could get services closer to home. Part of that plan included increasing the number of people who receive help through an innovation waiver, which covers a wide range of services available through Medicaid to people with disabilities. But the General Assembly has chronically underfunded the program. As of Monday, there were 18,950 people on the wait list for such services, according to a DHHS dashboard. Goda told NC Health News that some 40% of those people were getting some services as they waited. Medicaid expansion bolstered ADA. Since North Carolina expanded Medicaid in late 2023, more than 670,000 people have benefited from the state and federally funded health insurance plan. But now that program is in jeopardy because of the recently passed federal One Big Beautiful Bill Act, which upends the funding model upon which state lawmakers base their approval of expansion. Since North Carolina became one of the 40 states and Washington, D.C. that have now expanded Medicaid, some people with disabilities have been able to access health services through the program that they could not use before because their income was considered too high. It's meant so much for not only the 670,000 people on Medicaid expansion, but their families, Goda told NC Health News. If you're getting health care in a preventative manner, think about how much better an outcome that is for you as an individual, and also, just frankly, for a cost standpoint for all of us and our communities. When people put off care because they don't have health insurance, Goda added, their outcomes are likely to be worse than if they had taken preventative measures. You have to be served in that hospital or that health care setting. Medicaid expansion has been a well-received program among many in rural North Carolina and elsewhere. State lawmakers have not revealed how they will fill the funding void created by the recent federal budget decisions. Technology widens job access. Still, Goda and Egan spoke with optimism about moving forward while not giving short shrift to the challenges. If everyone going into the health care facility can pay their bills, they don't have to charge more to cover the people that can't, Goda said. There are jobs that are associated with it. People who are well can work and want to work and can contribute. And it just makes a better community for all of us. Egan sees opportunity for more strides with technology and advances that can help people with hearing and sight impairments better communicate. He also sees possibilities for better access to transportation. Transportation is such a huge barrier when it comes to someone who doesn't have access to a vehicle, or they may not be in an area that has really robust and efficient public transportation, Egan said. We're seeing a lot of forward progress with that. We're not there yet, but there are kinds of things I'm really hopeful about as we look not that far down the road that could tackle major system issues. Egan also would like to see more employment opportunities for people with disabilities. That's one of the things as we think about where we were 35 years ago and where we are today, he said. Egan also pointed out that under former Governor Roy Cooper, North Carolina became an employment-first state under an executive order signed in 2019. With that, the state made a commitment to becoming a model employer for people with disabilities. But it's a struggle to rethink how to do business under the policy. How do you even structure an interview in some cases? How does that person actually make it into the queue in order to make it to the next interview? Egan asked. We know that can happen, but if we look at the overall rates of employment for people with disabilities, it's still too low. Depending on the nature of the barrier, he said, 60% to 80% of people with disabilities are unemployed. We're making progress, but we have a long way to go, Egan said. From NBC News Dateline, August 11th, two blind women say Southwest Airlines left them behind following hours-long delay. The airline apologized and said it issued $100 vouchers as compensation for the delayed travel. Two blind women traveling from Louisiana to Florida said that Southwest Airlines forgot them at the airport following a nearly five-hour flight delay. The women said the ordeal happened on July 14th as they waited to board their flight out of New Orleans, according to WSVN in South Florida. The pair told the outlet that they realized they had been left behind because they were the only two on the Orlando-bound flight. One of the women, Sherry Brun, B-R-U-N, told the news station that they were told, "You're the only two people on this flight because they forgot about you." "I was angry and frustrated," Camille Tate said. Southwest denied that Brun and Tate were forgotten at the gate. The airline said the flight the women were scheduled for was delayed almost 5 hours and that many of the other passengers were accommodated on another MCO-bound flight that left a little earlier from a nearby gate. These two customers were not rebooked on that flight, so their assigned gate never changed, Southwest said. Our records show that they flew to MCO on the airplane that had been parked at their original gate. Brun said that no one at the gate told the women about an earlier flight. That airplane took off and our boarding pass had not been swiped, Tate said. Both women said Southwest needs to change how it communicates with passengers who need extra help when traveling. There needs to be follow-through, Brun told the news station. There needs to be some improvement in how they communicate with their passengers, especially those who have disabilities, Tate said. The airline apologized and said it issued $100 vouchers as compensation for the delayed travel. Southwest is always looking for ways to improve our customers' travel experiences, and we're active in the airline industry in sharing best practices about how to best accommodate passengers with disabilities, the company said. From Disability Rights NC, America's P&A System, how DRNC advances disability rights in NC. The Nationwide Protection and Advocacy, P&A, system was created in the 1970s in response to shocking revelations of abuse, neglect, and inhumane conditions at Willowbrook State School in New York, a state-run institution for people with intellectual and developmental disabilities. Congress held hearings and concluded that such conditions were widespread. States were ill-positioned to adequately oversee or reform these essential service systems, and an independent oversight system was necessary. In 1975, the Developmental Disabilities Assistance and Bill of Rights, DD, Act, a bipartisan measure signed into law by President Gerald Ford, established the first Protection and Advocacy Program, Protection and Advocacy for Developmental Disabilities, PADD. Congress authorized the Protection and Advocacy System to investigate allegations of abuse and neglect and advocate for the legal rights of people with disabilities in response to rampant and serious unmet need. One in three people in North Carolina has at least one disability. Disabled people are among the largest population groups in NC and the U.S., including people of all socioeconomic statuses, ages, races, and genders. Disability Rights North Carolina, DRNC, is the only organization exclusively dedicated to advancing and defending the rights of North Carolinians with all types of disabilities of all ages throughout our state. We do this work with a staff of 50. supplemented by legal interns, contract staff, and volunteers. DRNC uses a range of legal and other advocacy strategies, including information and referral services, community outreach and education, public policy and coalition work, and individual representation. Our areas of focus include monitoring and investigations of abuse and neglect, access to education, employment, housing, health care, and other community services, and ensuring Social Security beneficiaries are not being exploited or endangered. Using our federally mandated access authority, DRNC monitors and investigates abuse and neglect in psychiatric hospitals, developmental centers, children's institutions, nursing facilities, prisons, jails, and schools. DRNC staff work tirelessly to keep people with disabilities free from discrimination and abuse. We advocate for service systems that operate with efficiency and integrity, so limited resources are put to effective use. We help build accessible communities where people with disabilities are safe and able to live independent, productive lives. Are you new to our work or want to get to know us better? Take a moment to read our new publication and learn more about our work. DRNC has posted their newsletter on infograph.vengage.com. That's infograph.vengage.com. One case study is Meet Alexis, How One Girl's Courage Exposed a System That Locked Her Away. Alexis Ratcliffe, NC District 10, a 19-year-old patient at Atrium Health Wake Forest Baptist Hospital for the past 6 years, finally rolled out of the hospital June 30, 2025, bound for her new apartment in a nearby community where she can live independent life she's been dreaming of for so long. "We're gone! We're gone! I'm so excited!" Alexis exclaimed after leaving the hospital and heading to her new apartment with its pink bedroom and stocked kitchen. Family, friends, and advocates visited with her all day, sharing in the celebration of her freedom, and media were there to document her accomplishment. Alexis didn't live in the hospital for 6 years because she was sick. She lived there since she was 13 because she couldn't get the services she needed to live independently. Alexis was in a car crash when she was just 18 months old, and her neck was crushed. As a result, she is a quadriplegic and uses a ventilator. Alexis's move was the result of DRNC's advocacy with help from the U.S. Department of Justice and other agencies. U.S. Secretary of Health and Human Services Robert F. Kennedy Jr. announced in a press release a resolution that helped enable Alexis to move out, invoking his father's legacy. Today, the Office for Civil Rights fulfilled the vision by ending unnecessary segregation and helping a young woman build the future she deserves. This resolution brings Make America Healthy Again to life, empowering people like Alexis to live healthy, productive lives in their communities. A sharp and witty young woman, Alexis said that she is thankful for family and friends who wouldn't let me give up. Her determination served her well. "I've learned who I want to be and that I want to help advocate for people with disabilities. People with disabilities deserve to live in the community like everyone else," she said. While living in the hospital, Alexis graduated high school with honors and received a full scholarship to college. She's put that on hold until she gets settled. In the meantime, she just completed training to further develop her advocacy skills. Next step, college, then law school. Looking at the spaces in her new home, Alexis decided the kitchen is her favorite. A decorative plaque above the refrigerator says it all. Home is where your story begins. Alexis is ready. From AFB.org, a review of Ally, an accessible AI assistant. Article by Janet Ingber, I-N-G-B-E-R. Ally is a free updated app from Envision Technologies BV. It works across all platforms and automatically syncs with all devices. In the iOS App Store, several apps begin with the word Ally. This one is labeled as the Accessible AI Assistant, SIC. The Ally app does not use capital letters. Almost nothing is capitalized, including names and first words and sentences. For this review, I will frequently use capitalized letters for clarity. For this evaluation, I'm using an iPhone 16 with an iOS 18.5 and Ally version 1.2.0. From the App Store, Ally is an AI assistant built for accessibility, designed to empower people who need a smarter, personal, and more intuitive way to interact with the world. Unlike mainstream AI tools that assume users can see a screen or type, Ally is a fully voice-first, context-aware, and designed to support how you interact with the world. It's not just a one-off answer. Ally remembers context, learns your preferences, and responds in a way that fits your needs, whether it's reading, navigating, recognizing objects, or managing daily tasks. Ally is available in English, Dutch, French, German, Hindi, Italian, Russian, Spanish, and Turkish. Getting started. The first time Ally is opened, there's a Let's Start button. Below that is an option to sign in if you already have an account, and an option to create an account. If you want to use Ally on more than one device, an account is necessary. If you activate the Let's Start button, the app will give you information about each Ally assistant. It will also walk you through the setup process. If you choose not to create an account, the first screen is where you will choose an Ally. There is a list of voices, each with a different personality. It is easy to change or update your Ally. The app will ask for access to the microphone and camera. Should you decide to make changes to your existing Ally or select a different Ally, you can do that through the Preferences menu on the home screen. Creating an account. When creating your account, you have the option of signing in with Apple, signing in with Google, or using an email address and password. No matter which method you choose, a phone number is required. The first box you encounter is a read-only field containing the country code and area code based on where the app thinks you live. Note that this can be incorrect, especially if you are near the border of an area code. For example, the app defaulted to a New Jersey area code instead of one for my actual location. Fortunately, this can be changed. Next to the area code is a button. When selected, the button opens a new screen with a list of countries as well as an edit box where you can enter your country. I entered United States and a list of area codes for the U.S. was presented. The area codes were in numerical order and I selected the one I wanted. Once the correct country and area codes were in place, I was able to enter the rest of my phone number and request a verification code. The final step is to enter the code. Making changes. The app's home screen has three options: Preferences, Talk to your Ally, and Chat with your Ally. It will use your Ally's name. The first option is Preferences is personalization. There are two sections, About You and About Your Ally. If you have already set up your Ally, information will be in these two sections. Information can as easily be edited. When you are finished editing, Ally will ask if you want to save the changes. After a conversation is concluded, you will be asked whether the conversation was helpful. Ally Inside. Ally correctly identified my $1, $5, $10, and $20 bills. I purposely dropped my keys and was given directions to find them. I placed the soda can on a kitchen counter and was told where to look. I asked for key lime pie recipes, and Ally gave me two of them. Unfortunately, instead of getting one recipe and then the next, I was given the first part of each recipe, which made it harder to follow. I then asked for them in order, which presented the recipes in the proper format. The app did very well with clothing. It read garment tags and gave detailed descriptions of the clothing, including color. The app had no difficulty reading information on t-shirts. Ally read a variety of products, including canned goods, over-the-counter medicine bottles, frozen food cooking directions, spice jars, and cosmetics. If there wasn't additional information available for any product, the app asked if I wanted to hear it. Ally did an excellent job reading printed text. In one case, I had it read a document that contained several different languages, which it did with no difficulty. Ally Outdoors. In my testing, Ally's GPS capabilities were inaccurate. I could not find my specific location. While using its image recognition features, the app was able to identify general surroundings, for example, telling me I was on a sidewalk with houses to the left and grass and parked cars on the right. However, attempts to determine my exact location or nearby points of interest by reading signs or analyzing the environment did not work. The app was unable to provide useful or accurate guidance outdoors. Conclusion. Ally can definitely serve as a useful part of your accessibility toolkit. The app is easy to navigate and works very well indoors for a wide range of tasks. In my testing, the GPS features were unreliable, so I would hesitate to recommend using the app for tasks related to navigation. That being said, the indoor capabilities are strong and can be depended upon. From FightingBlindness.org, Foundation Fighting Blindness and ALMA join forces to bridge the mental health gap for blind and low vision individuals and their families. The Foundation Fighting Blindness, the driving force in the global development of treatments and cures for blinding diseases, announced a national partnership with ALMA, a network of 25,000 mental health professionals dedicated to simplifying access to high-quality, affordable mental health care. ALMA was selected as a strategic partner based on its mission alignment and commitment to provider education and training, focused on the needs of patients. As part of this collaboration, the Foundation and ALMA train mental health professionals focused on the unique experiences and needs of individuals who are blind or have low vision. The initial training sessions took place in March and are now available on demand through ALMA's platform, with providers eligible for continuing education CE credits. This partnership brings together our expertise and ALMA's expansive provider network to ensure that more individuals and families receive the tailored mental health support they deserve, said the Foundation's CEO, Jason Menzo. ALMA understands that our community faces unique challenges due to blindness or low vision that cannot be overlooked. In conjunction with the launch of the partnership and in honor of Mental Health Awareness Month in May, the Foundation has unveiled its new Mental Health Resource Center, now available on the Foundation's website. This resource center offers tools, resources, and connections to help individuals and families manage the unique emotional complexities associated with vision loss. The site features include a curated directory of ALMA therapists who have completed the specialized blind and low vision training. Later this year, ALMA's online platform will include a specialty label enabling blind and low vision individuals and their families to more easily identify and connect with therapists who have completed the training courses. Personal stories from community members navigating their own mental health journeys. Information for caregivers, family members, and clinicians supporting someone with vision loss. Trusted organizations and programs aligned with the mission to provide comprehensive emotional and mental health support. Downloadable tools and resources for managing vision-related emotional health. With resources for both individuals and families, the Resource Center provides support at every stage of the vision loss experience, from diagnosis and treatments to adjustment and long-term well-being. Our mission is to ensures access to high-quality, affordable mental health care. And a key part of this includes making sure our providers are equipped to support any patient that comes into their care, said Dr. Elizabeth Morray, M-O-R-R-A-Y, VP of Clinical Operations at ALMA. We want to bridge the gaps in our health system so that all people feel supported in their mental health care journey. And that is why this partnership with the Foundation Fighting Blindness is so important, so that the therapists have the resources to create an inclusive and supportive therapeutic environment. This collaboration and the new Mental Health Resource Center mark a pivotal step toward breaking down stigma and creating access to critical support, added Menzo. I've run out of time for this week's Vision News, so I can't finish that article, but I hope you listen next time. I'm Doris Hyde, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's episode is underwritten by the Apex Lions Club, serving the community since 1937 by providing services and financial support for people who are blind, have low vision, or print disabilities. To learn more about the services provided by the Apex Lions Club, go to apexlions.org. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind, have low vision, or print disabilities. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. 919-832-5138.